Tiger King, the true crime story reigns supreme as the 2020 pandemic documentary series on Netflix. The tale about an eccentric group of private zoo owners battling it out over who would be the king of the caged jungle cat captivated the world at a time we all felt trapped in cages ourselves.
It was so wildly popular that it is now getting a dramatic series produced by everyone's favorite lesbian, Kate McKinnon, and starring none other than Hedwig himself, John Cameron Mitchell. Will the Hedwig Queen be able to transform herself into the Tiger King?
Today, we take a look at the new web series, Joe Exotic, now in production, that digs in even deeper into the mayhem, meth, and madness of the Tiger King world.
Plus, lesbify everything. Folks are asking for comedian Tig Notaro to digitally replace every terrible man in any movie ever.
There is an online petition to cancel Colton Underwood's Netflix reality TV show.
Are Perot masks basic?
And who will win RuPaul's Drag Race Season 13? Place your bets. I always crown myself the winner. And I always lose.
Aww.
I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion, and you're a winner in my heart.
Aww. Because
this is Feast of Fun.
Absolutely. On nights like this, when my tiger zoo smells like piss, and my animal handler's arm's been bitten off, I get high, I really do. I smoke some meth from an old pipe, and I lay down some karaoke tracks. I brush up my mullet, smokes a little more meth. I put my Golemay dress shirt on. Woohoo! Suddenly I'm Joe Exotic, TV's Tiger King. But then I wake up and I'm inside a prison cell. Federal prison. I write letters to President Trump and ask him kindly for some help. And the strangest thing, he never returns my calls. I eat lunch, lift weights, suck a lot of prison cock. Because I'm in a prison cell, I brush off my mullet, take a hit off the meth pipe. I put my Golemay dress shirt on. Suddenly I'm Joe Exotic's TV Tiger King. If you're not careful, I get my cats to kill you off like I did Carol Baskins unsuccessfully.
Wow.
That is... I'm applauding myself.
You deserve it. So does Hedwig and Joe Exotic. It was like Joe Exotic meets Hedwig right here in the home studio.
I should have been cast as Hedwig on Broadway. Damn it.
You got to have talent for that, though.
I could pass the Next audition. Time. Let me entertain you. Let me make you mine.
Also, keep your clothes on, okay?
Let
keep...
me serenade you. Ooh, and we'll titty. Have a good, good time.
There's another titty.
Hey, you know, listen, they're all
You've
the headwigs.
You've been getting a lot of love online lately with your titties.
Yes, my
Somebody
titties.
Wants to, like, draw your titties.
Yeah, there's an artist who wants to draw me naked like his French girls.
Ooh.
A la Titanic. But let's talk about, we're talking about Tiger King. Mm-hmm. There's a gold rush, right? So the Netflix series was the number one show of 2020. Mm-hmm. And everybody in Hollywood wants to do Tiger King made for TV series. Mm-hmm. And so from Saturday Night Live's Kate McKinnon.
Right.
Although she doesn't play Carol Baskins on Saturday Night Live.
No, she doesn't. She does not play that character. She plays other characters.
But so she, I guess, is producing it with her Ghostbusters money, which she made a lot of.
to do a made-for-TV series about the Tiger King, or I guess the things we didn't see in the documentary. Because there were some shady things that happened, right?
Well, it's going to be, it's, I'm sure it's going to be based on what we see in the documentary. And also, I think there's a book that came out as well. So there'll be elements of that, because how can you not avoid, you know, Carol Baskin's missing husband, the husband, you know, who accidentally, does something to himself, and then, you know, the weird marriages, all those kinds of things.
Her alleged murder of her first husband.
Yeah. I mean, these things have just, you know, it captured the zeitgeist of the world, because it came out during that first month of the pandemic shutdown of 2020. So everybody was like, what are we going to watch?
And America felt like those tigers in those cages. It's like President Trump was running things, the world was falling apart, and we were just like, where's our next meal going to come from?
Oh my God, it's coming from a Walmart dumpster? I mean, is that where it's coming from?
It came from one of the handler's arms. That's what the tiger ripped off the arm of one of the handlers.
Oh my gosh. But you know what? That handler was just like, you know what?
Those are the perks of the job. The cost of doing business.
You know, yeah. I always wanted to lose weight. I didn't know it would be like this. But
and so John Cameron Mitchell from Hedwig and the Angry Inch, the originator, the queen, Queen Hedwig, is going to become Tiger King.
And I can picture it. He says in an interview that like he came from the same area, Texas, Oklahoma, that area. He grew up like a Christian, rural, country boy. And so he has a lot of affection for it. Now, some people have a lot of criticism. What?
I'm just laughing because that's not the only thing he shares in common with Joe Exotic. I know from firsthand experience. But I'm not one to gossip because this is Feast of Fun. This is a wholesome family show.
What is it? The fashion sense?
His recreational activities do not involve shooting guns, but other things, you know, so allegedly.
Well, listen, haven't we all at haven't, some point?
Listen, haven't, I'm no stranger to better living through chemistry. Listen, John Cameron Mitchell lived in New York City for a long time. He is no stranger to a good party.
Oh, I'm sure he's not a stranger to
or that, to, though. You know, people with missing teeth and all-night sex orgies. So,
well, he did make that movie, right? And wasn't there just, a big giant sex orgy in that too, right? Short bus?
Short bus, honey. Short bus, long bus. He's taking all kinds of vehicles. So I think it's going to be interesting seeing him sort of like lose himself and transform himself into this very well-known character. Because that's the tricky thing about it. It's not he's like creating a new character, like Hedwig.
Well,
he's
is going Hedwig to be a new character? Or ask
Jane County.
Jane County about that.
Yeah, you know, part of it is like John Cameron Mitchell is very reluctant sometimes to be interviewed about Hedwig. Because you guys listen to the podcast and you know there's a lot of salty folks in his past who have things to say about that role. And Jane County is one of them.
Yes.
She feels that her life story, her character, her onstage persona, her looks,
her hair,
her music, her style was all wholesale mopped by John Cameron Mitchell to create really is an extraordinary character in a film and a musical.
Which we all love.
And, you know, we probably wouldn't even, a lot of people even know about Jane County if it wasn't for that. But I hope that somewhere in this good world that we live in, that John Cameron Mitchell wrote her a check or said thank you or had some kind of reconciliation of some kind. Because it is, you know, as somebody who gets ideas stolen from him left and right, okay, can I say that? You know, it doesn't feel good when, especially people you know, help themselves to your creative intellect and not say thank you, and at the same time also like act like your ideas are for theirs for the take.
Well, the thing is, though, too, is like sometimes, especially if you have legal advice, they'll say, listen, if you thank them, that's going to open you up to some kind of like lawsuit or something.
And Hedwig has made a lot of money for JCM.
And Jane, I think, lives in her mother's house in the country with about 17 cats.
Just like Carol Baskins.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So similarities. So maybe there is more in common. This is more like typecasting for John Cameron Mitchell.
Yeah, perhaps. You know, and the thing about this, the documentary came out on Netflix and captivated everybody's imagination, a lot of people were reluctant to watch it because they're like, well, they didn't want to get on the bandwagon because everybody else was watching it. And then a lot of people fell into it and they're just like, oh, my God, I loved it. I'm absolutely obsessed. And then other people were just like, I couldn't get into it. I'm repulsed by it. And I'm seeing kind of the similar things with this, the movie out that's now and there's Oscar nominations and Razzie nominations. For Glenn Close for Hillbilly Elegy,
yeah,
where it's kind of like, you know, it's poverty porn, right? It's, you know, it's over sentimentalization. Yes, you know, it's maudlin, as they say, and so it's not creating like an accurate portrayal. So it'll be interesting to see if this version of Joe Exotic and the Tiger King plays along that lines.
Well, a lot of the people in that region in Georgia for that movie,
Deliverance,
feel that that film really exploited them and painted, you know, people of sons of the soils. Mm-hmm. We don't call them hillbillies anymore.
Right.
They can only call each other that. they basically said that it portrayed us as hate mongers, as narrow-minded people, as cannibals, as vicious mm-hmm. people, and we are not anything like that. And, you know, they feel that even it's brought a lot of ugly tourists into their region and they're all like, are you going to kill us and stuff? You know, so there is some like cultural sensitivity that needs to take place when you are portraying people in the rural South, even though the rural South doesn't have the best reputation for equality, you know?
Right. Exactly.
So he's like, well, you know, physician, heal thyself, but. You know, there are a lot of good people. There's a lot of racial diversity in the South. And I think, you know, when Hollywood portrays these communities, it is really important to show that as well. Or I'd like to at least think that can happen, you know. And so Glenn Close, or in this case, Tiger King, you know, there is a lot of complications that happened with the documentary that didn't even get discussed in the press.
Oh, really? Like what?
Like Joe, like right now, me singing as Hedwig as Joe Exotic is more accurate to the documentary than you realize, because the documentary presents Joe Exotic as if he was singing all his songs.
Right.
But in fact, it was a hired actor singer to do those songs. And though Joe Exotic passed them as his own, and even the documentary doesn't really clarify that.
He lip-synced them.
He's lip-syncing for his life, literally, and from a prison cell.
So if he is lip-syncing... Yeah. Does that mean that he's done drag? There has to be photos of Joe Exotic like in female drag, right?
I don't think so, because Joe Exotic is more like Liberace. His glitz and glamour is enough for show business for him. And he's also, you know, very conservative in some ways. He's like, I'm a man's man, you know. I'm you know, like think about the lovers that he chose. They were all kind of like, you know, heteronormative or straight identifying guys who he persuaded through, you know, the luxurious lifestyle of living in a tiger zoo with plenty of drugs, ammunition, and guns. Not a good combination, as you could see from the documentary, led to lots of problems happening. So,
yeah. And, you know, it's it'll be interesting to see what it's like when it comes out. And from what I understand, Joe's latest husband has kind of like called it quits with him, that they're no longer like married. And the other
guy. Well, Joe has, you know, other romantic relationships, I'm sure, in prison.
Yeah. And then the other guy who was kind of cute, who then he opened up his mouth and he had like three teeth in his mouth. He got brand new teeth. He got some.
Not so cute no more.
I know, right? There was just something about like, oh, you don't have any teeth. How cute that is. Oh, you have teeth. Forget about it.
Well, can you make the sound with those things, with the retainers? Like, hey guys, yeah. I could take my teeth out.
I probably could. Let me see.
Just pull them out. Just give me like your best hillbilly. I can take my teeth out.
I can take my teeth out.
Oh, I'm getting horny now.
This is my last week for my aligners, folks. I'm going to have straight teeth.
Let me see your teeth. Well, you're just like 85% not Joe Exotic anymore. No more jack-o'-lantern smile for you.
Visit uniformteeth.com and use promo
feast.
Code
fun?
FEAST.
Feast.
Yeah, fun. You couldn't use fun because they needed four letters, at least four letters.
Oh, it's gotta be feast. Feast. Yes.
And I'll have some before and after pictures coming up very shortly.
And so what happens if your teeth get crooked again?
You know, I actually thought I was thinking about doing like a fundraiser, a Kickstarter, because I have all my old sets, and for like $20,000 or something like that, I'll just do the aligners, but in reverse.
Oh, so you're going to do like one of those stop action animation
well,
things.
Well, no, because I'll have my teeth be all straight and then I'll make them crooked like they were not crowded. They were crowded. My teeth were crowded before. So then I'll re-crowd my teeth. Does that sound like a fun idea?
I'm still a little strained from singing like Joe Exotic.
I told you to sing it like Hedwig.
You're like, well, because Hedwig's very like, I get hot. Feel mad and on the verge of... He's very soft. He's very Diana Ross. Yeah. And Joe Exotic is Tina Turner. You know, he's roaring. Mm. Like a lion. Rawr. Like a tiger. Rawr. Rawr. Tiger King, you know? In real life, you know, like, we don't know what Joe Exotic's singing voice would sound like, but I imagine it's like, I put on some makeup, you know?
It's going to sound very... It's got to have a little twang, right?
Yeah, it's very honky-tonk. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's not going to be the soothing voice that you see in the series, you know. It's more like, hey, good looking, what you got cooking? How about cooking something good for me? But no human body parts, please.
Oh, my gosh. What happened to Carol Baskin's husband?
We'll never know. It's in the stomach of a tiger. You know,
or the plane went down, right?
We don't know, honey.
Mm-mm-mm-mm. I don't know. So,
so a lot of news happened today. Mm-hmm. The police officer that killed George Floyd is been found guilty of all three charges.
Mm-hmm. Derek Chauvin.
And so America is breathing a little bit of sigh of relief, although they're saying that this is just Derek Chauvin and not mm-hmm. reforming the police. This mm-hmm. is not defunding the police. This is not addressing systemic violence. This is just
right.
one specific case. T.S. Madison said, they're not stupid. That's what she said. T.S. Madison's like, they are not stupid.
Well, it's like, you know, people expect to put the sins of the nation on this one police officer. Of course, he should go to jail, but that does not exonerate the rest of the nation. You know, it's kind of like what AOC said about Trump. Like, he can stay or he can go. The system has to change, you know?
And it's interesting because President Biden is saying this is not changing the system. Mm-hmm. We need to change the system.
Yeah, it's some very strong words, yes.
He's saying prayers to the family. However, the system mm-hmm. and the racist system needs to change. Mm-hmm. I would say, regardless of your reservations against the Democratic Party and President Trump for being middle of the road, that is not a middle of the road message. Mm. So, you know, or as Lady Bunny says about Bernie Sanders, it's like, fine, you can tweet all about it, but what's your policy? What's going to be your legislation? Let's see it.
Mm-hmm. So, well, and you know, the president did call on Congress to create some kind of legislation. They are pushing, hopefully, something forward. We'll see if it passes. We'll see if it changes things. Things do need to change. There's no reason for the police in this nation to use the amount of violence that they use against its citizens. It doesn't happen in other places in the world. I mean, in some places of the world, the police come and grab you out of your home, take you away, and you're never heard from again. There's no trial. You're just disappeared, you know. That's what could happen to this country if we allow it to happen.
Hashtag Cerro Maravilla, Puerto Rico in the 1980s. Mm-hmm. Look it up, girl. Yeah. You're not going to like it. Mm-hmm. Chauvin will possibly be facing 40 years in prison for second-degree murder, up to 25 years for third-degree murder, and up to 10 years for manslaughter. Those are the three charges. Mm-hmm. He was guilty. Now, Minnesota's sentencing guidelines recommend about 12 and a half years in prison for each murder charge and about 4 years for the manslaughter charge. So in this case, the state has asked for a tougher sentence than recommendations. Mm-hmm. So they're going to be deciding the sentencing in about 8 weeks from mm-hmm. now. So 2 months.
I heard on the radio here in Chicago today, a local Chicago guy said he was up in Minnesota, I think like 2 years ago, and he was harassed by Chauvin and some other police officer and put down on the ground, and he filed a complaint and nothing became of it. And he's feeling like kind of like that survivor's guilt. He's like, if something could have come from that, maybe Chauvin would have been off the street and George Floyd would be alive today.
That's what a lot of the people who are there filming it felt mm-hmm. too. They feel like guilty that they couldn't do more to stop that man from being murdered. And, you know, I'm like, and some people actually called the police and the police said, well, aren't the police there? And they're like, yeah, that's the one who's doing the murdering.
It's just absolutely terrible.
So, you know, this is definitely good news. It's definitely a step in the right direction. But again, we need to see policy. We need to see change. We need to see budgets shifting money away from police departments and into helping people as opposed to hurting them.
Well, you know, it's very interesting. As of like last week, I read an article.
Yeah.
In Norway, they have not had one murder in Norway this year at all. Now, normally by this time of year, they would have had like 15 murders or something. They average like 22 to maybe 30 years in the country of 5 million people. And one of the things that they say the reason why they haven't had any murders this year is because the pandemic, kind of everybody's stuck in place. And in some ways, it's formed a certain amount of stability. And so they're discovering that most of these crimes is when there is an unstable incident, that like things aren't kind of set. And when I think about the crime here in the United States, you know, especially here like in Chicago on the South Side, there's a lot of instability. There's economic instability. There's housing instability. And so, you know, there's racism. So these things all kind of like build on each other. And when you're in an unstable environment, you know, things explode. And so one of the things that I'm thinking is like, how much more can we do to provide stability for people, whether that's, you know, through basic income, you know, or something like that along that lines, employment opportunities, stopping this racism. You know, we wouldn't need the police as much if we provided stability, healthcare for our people.
Well, you know, it's certainly an ongoing discussion to have. And, you know, certainly there's no shortage of that discussion on social media. But social media is not it's not policy change, you know, and it seems to me very clear that Americans want to go in this direction. The you know, again, it's going to be whether legislators actually go in this direction. And they're the ones who need to be held accountable, not just, you know, Derek Chauvin. So, Mark, Tig Notaro, the internet wants Tig Notaro to be digitally inserted into every movie.
They want to replace all the problematic men that have ever been in movies with Tig Notaro. Zack Snyder's Army of the Dead had an actor in it. His name is Chris D'Elia, and he's been accused of crimes, you know, grooming young women. I think there's allegedly some child pornography in his stuff. And so they've taken him out of the movie and they've digitally inserted Tig Notaro into it. And so like they just reshot like the scenes with her in it and put her in.
Tig Notaro is owning Hollywood and she's bringing the Bones magic from Star Trek back.
Yeah.
You know, her character on Star Trek Discovery is really bringing that sort of like, I'm a doctor, not a physicist, or I'm a doctor, not a psychologist. And you know, she has that sort of a snarky gruff approach that's very humorous in the circumstances that they find in, and she also sort of draws attention to the awkwardness and ridiculousness of sci-fi in general, you know. So she's like, my back hurts, you know, I can't pick up that screwdriver off the floor, you know. So there's a lot of great little details. And so it's really fun to see Tig Notaro's career doing so well.
Well, it's interesting because she's had some really horrible health scares, you know, in her career. And I think that's one of the things that kind of really propelled her into the spotlight is when she came out talking about her ordeal with cancer. And so I think, you know, when you face something like that, you're just like, I'm going to take every opportunity in my life that I can take. Another thing that she does, a project that she works on is like, called, I think it's something like Tig Notaro Knows Nothing, and it's her interviewing celebrities, and she has no idea who these celebrities are. And some of them, I'm just like, do you live under a rock? She had that guy from Monk, like the one, that actor, he's also the dad on
you don't even know his name.
Tony Shalhoub.
I don't know who Tony Shalhoub is.
He was also the dad in like The Incredible Mrs. Maisel. And so you know, she's interviewing, he's just like, I really can't believe she doesn't know who I am.
I have to say that half of celebrities in Hollywood, and we read these magazines, we look at them. If I got into an elevator with Tony Shalhoub, I'd be like, well, you have nice breath.
I would recognize Tony Shalhoub.
You can tell they're Hollywood celebrities by looking at their nails. Because a lot of them get manicures. They get things that normal people don't get taken care of, you know? They get their eyebrows styled. They get, you know, Like, most people are not going to go see a blader?
Microblade to get their eyebrows done.
Yeah, like I did that on television last year.
I think you're about due for a touch-up.
You know, it's expensive.
Yeah.
It's like $300.
Teen Mom OG said she'd do it again for free.
Yeah, but they're
then you got a tipper.
That they haven't invited me back, so you know.
We'll see.
But I would just show
you
up.
You know who else has
Caitlin
nice
Baltieros,
hands?
Yeah.
Bank tellers.
Why is that?
Because you will see their hands a lot, so they always make sure that their hands are nice and clean and filed and manicured.
It's like your savings. You're soaking in it.
Now, last week we did a whole show on Colton Underwood and his whole coming out and The Bachelor and everything like that. And now I found out
tons of things about Colton. This is the thing, the problem that we have doing this
podcast.
What
did you find out, Nancy Drew?
So we do a show and then all you guys who are listening call me up or post messages or shit like that. And all this shady motherfucking thing about this Colton Underwood, which the internet calls him Mayo on Mayo. They call him, his nickname is Mayonnaise.
Oh, yeah. They just mayonnaise.
I like mayonnaise to some degree. It makes a great salad dressing, mm-hmm. you know, with a little bit of vinaigrette. It's like a low budget Caesar salad dressing. However, with Colton Underwood, it turns out he's very cozy with a lot of right-wing media personalities, including the football player that likes to kneel for conservative values and not against racism.
Oh.
You know who that is, right?
I do. The one who, there was also rumors and speculations that he might be a little, you know.
Ting-a-ling-a-ling.
And he was popular, like, what was that? God, probably almost like 10 years ago or something. He was all over everywhere because he was putting like Bible quotes and he was the darling of the Christian right.
Tim Tebow.
Yeah, that's it.
And
attractive guy.
If I'm going to, now that Colton Underwood is out and we know that, you know, we speculate that Tim is in the closet. That's the Sean Cody porn I would pay money to see.
Would you? I wouldn't even be interested. Like, listen, think they're both attractive, you know what I mean? But they just don't do it for me.
There's a sick fascination that I want to see them getting at it. Because they're both media...
Whores.
Whores is such an ugly word. Enthusiasts.
Media enthusiasts.
They like attention.
Well, you know, people are mad at Colton Underwood because they're like, you're really trying to cash in on this whole coming out thing. And it's just like, for people, it is a real struggle. And yeah, you've had a real struggle with it as well. But I don't know. It just seems terrible.
So as a former, you know, he wasn't with the NFL. He was a professional football player. Mm. He's got money. He's, as people pointing out, he's white. He was on one of the top television shows with Republicans in America, and he was the feature, the prize pig in his own series, you know, before, was it after Finding Prince Charming tanked on Logo?
Well, because he was a contestant on The Bachelorette, didn't get picked, right? And then he became The Bachelor.
Exactly. I think that's how he's like, I'm a virgin. And everyone's now like, yeah, with women, you're a virgin.
Well, I think also, too, one of the other people that people are connecting him with is he's a fan of Candace Jordan, who's the black conservative.
Candace Owens or Candace?
Candace Owens. That's
Candace Owens.
Yeah, not Candace Jordan. Candace Jordan's our local Playboy socialite here in Chicago.
She's like, what did I do?
Who's a wonderful darling, okay?
Candace Owens.
Yeah, Candace Owens, who's the conservative pundit. I think, is she on Fox News or is she
somewhere?
Just on
she's one of those Fox News. Like, we need a black woman to show up and say, racism is not there's no racism in America, that kind of stuff. And you're just like, oh,
that's
you know,
her. And she's a real sourpuss.
I kind of expect all this from Colton Underwood. I don't expect this from Gus Kentworthy. And I'm like, girl, hustling hard. You pulled your face out of RuPaul's butt, and Michelle Visage was mad about that. And then you put it right on Colton Underwood's butt. I'm like, honey, just breathe a little bit, Gus. Give yourself some oxygen.
I think he's going to be in the next Olympics or something, but he's also, you know, he's got to look for his future. He's trying to build a media career, so I don't fault him for getting into this. But I don't think he really understood
what he was getting into.
What he was getting into, or maybe the background of Colton. Because there is a change.org petition that right now it has 28,000 signatures for Netflix to cancel it. And this is what the petition says. Colton Underwood is a former Bachelor lead who stalked his final pick, Casey Randolph. He placed a tracker on her car, sent her and her friends anonymous threatening texts, and was even seen standing outside her window extremely late in the night, resulting in her brother attempting to de-escalate the situation. Cassie is a victim of Colton's abuse, and he does not deserve a platform in any way. Regardless of his sexuality, Colton should not be given a platform as a result of his abusive, manipulative, and dangerous behavior. And, you know, it's funny, we were talking last week about the other reality TV shows about gay dating, and we mentioned Prince Charming, Finding Prince Charming, mm-hmm. which is hosted by Lance Bass, and Lance Bass has chimed in on the situation too. He's like, there's going to be a lot of people that are just going to hate him. Because, you know, a lot of people hated Lance Bass too when he came out too. And there's
they hated him for other reasons, you know?
Right.
So I think there's a difference. Lance Bass mm-hmm. was a participant in a successful pop group.
Yes.
Was it Boys in Sync, right?
Yeah.
That was him. Mm-hmm. With Justin Timberlake. Mm. Can you imagine that today? I can't. But, you know, because Justin Timberlake is like this huge star, and Lance Bass is basically us, you know.
Basically.
You're like, remember, give Cash App, PayPal.
No, Venmo. Feast of Fun. Best way to support the podcast is become a Plus member.
Yeah, at feastoffun.com/plus. Access thousands of legendary shows. I'm sure, you know, Lance Bass has his own little, you know, plus
side hustle
that he's like asking his fans from. Did you remember NSYNC? I was in NSYNC, and people were like, you were?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, you were. You were the one that when they sang, they just turned down the volume.
Lance, you're in the back. D-Listed used to call him?
Frosty Locks.
Yes.
Princess Frosty Locks.
That's such a good name.
It's a good read, mm-hmm. yeah. We're putting that show together.
Oh, so many fantastic.
Legendary reads, but we're just amassing a lot of stuff.
My God, how about that podcast we did yesterday?
With Princess Deandra.
Her Royal Highness, Princess Deandra. And we have the video now of her like poking Diana Ross, and Diana Ross kind of like slapped her head away. She's just like,
She flipped her the bird.
And then Princess Diana flipped her the bird.
Yeah. And our listeners are not supporting HRH, Princess Diana.
You know, HRH knows she was wrong in that situation, and she's fessed up. She admits her guilt. She knows it was wrong. But she's also like, I was really drunk. She drank a whole bottle of champagne. So
yeah, don't get in a fight with mm-hmm. Princess Diana when she's drunk. She's going to fuck you up.
I don't know if she gets super violent or she just gets pokey.
She just read you to filth.
Think about all the tea she spilled yesterday.
Sometimes a vicious read can hurt you in a way that a claw scratching at your dress don't.
Oh, without a doubt. A read can change your world.
I know. So that's coming up.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of reading, I'm going to read something to you.
Wait, one second. Okay. Get to that fan letter in a second.
Okay.
But so I posted a read about Pierrot masks.
Oh, yeah.
What are Pierrot masks?
So you said Pierrot masks. I typically call them Harlequin masks.
And they were huge in the 80s.
Yes.
And every girl in high school, every grandma, every suburban housewife had six of them in the kitchen. 10 in the bathroom, 4 in the bedroom, 6 in the living room, and they all smelled like old lady perfume.
Well, I always associated them with like people that went to New Orleans, and they would buy them because you buy them in the souvenir shop.
It's a souvenir in New Orleans, thing.
Because they do have a, you know, kind of a French kind of feel to them, right?
And they're like, it's so mysterious. It's like I see my feelings reflected in the mask. And you're like, girl, that is so basic, and it's like everywhere. And now, fast forward to 2021, and I see drag queens everywhere. Basically, I caught it kind of the catatonic look.
Mm-hmm.
Like in my day, in Lady Bunny, Wigstock, Drag Explosion in the 90s, when you were photographed in drag, you were making a face like Divine. You were like smiling or, you know,
energy
scowling.
Alive.
It seems like, and I call this the lobotomized drag look. Mm-hmm. I'm a gender warrior. and warriors never smile.
Well, the thing is, when you do the smile and whatnot, you get creases in your face and your makeup. You know, it distorts your face. Maybe you don't have nice teeth, so they just want that. You know, they have a canvas that they painted, and it's a still life.
It's a catatonic look, like a Perot mask. Mm-hmm. And to me, it's like it feels basic. The makeup is basic, and you know, and someone then said on social media, "Is like, are you coming for Gottmik?" And I said, "Well, if the high heel shoe fits, why not wear it?" I mean, I have to say, Gottmik, in terms of design, in terms of fashion, in terms of costumes, is probably one of the most developed and sophisticated artists to grace RuPaul's Drag Race ever. And they would be very wise to grant Gottmik the prize, not just because they're trans, but also because they're a really established makeup and costume artist in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. I mean, Gottmik's friends with Paris Hilton, you know? And then RuPaul wants that connection.
Friends.
Listen, Gottmik picked up the phone and said, "Hey, what did you think about my impersonation of you on Snatch Game?" And Paris Hilton was like, "I liked it. It was really cool.
It was hot.
You know, so at least Gottmik can pick up the phone and call Paris Hilton. Mm-hmm. So I would say that's friendly. And so anyways, you know, and I feel like Gottmik's also somebody who's been to design school, to fashion school. I'm sure this conversation has come up in a critique where they were saying like, Perot mask, girl, that is so basic. Well, what is this, 1985?
Who's your
Pier One? Did you get your makeup from Pier One? So, you know.
But, you know, maybe the younger generation, they don't know it. Because, like, from what I was just reading an article about fashion nowadays, is, like, the a lot of the younger generation is picking up some of the fashion choices that, like, our grandfathers would have worn, like, in the 40s or 50s. Because to them, it's new. They've never really experienced it.
There's a reason why people made fun of mimes. There's a reason why mimes were bullied and attacked. I guess they were really popular in parks in the 1970s.
Sure. Well, Shields and Yarnell had a TV show.
They had a TV show
for a while. And they were also guests on a bunch of different things. Yeah, for whatever reason, people were at one point in time enchanted with mimes. And then, like everything, people just turned on them.
Yeah,
they turned.
They're going to turn on.
Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what kind
of.
So
if your makeup looks like a Perot mask, it's just a matter of time before America says, "One day you're in, and next day you're out." So I think, you know, because Gottmik is an artist who is receptive to feedback, who is always thinking about transforming themselves, and is able to paint with a wide variety of styles, I don't see them sticking to that Perot mask style for much longer.
Well, I also feel that they never pick a winner who is stuck in one position, you know?
You mean like Trixie Mattel?
Well, I guess they did pick. Oh, she did win
for All Stars. Only when she started making money that they were like, "Oh, we like you all of a sudden."
You know, well, yeah. I remember, you know, this is something Jade told us from season one. She told me that, you know, after she didn't win, she said to RuPaul, she was just like, "RuPaul, why didn't you pick me?" RuPaul was just like, "Jade, you have walls." And like, that's the only thing she really told her about it. And so that's something that, you know,
I agree with that.
That RuPaul really focuses on. She focuses on people who have walls built up around them, people who are just focused on one kind of thing, but also as their identity. So she really is, for her, you know, doing drag is about destroying the ego. It's about destroying the identity. And so if you're somebody who's just like, "My only color is pink, the only thing I'm going to wear," or like Tina Burner, like, "My colors are orange and that's all I'm ever going to wear," that's not going to appeal to RuPaul.
You're coming for the pinkening. You're coming for Tina Burner.
I'm not coming for them. I'm just explaining. Listen, that can be like, for some people, identity is where it's at. Yeah. You know, that if that's what you want to do and that's what you want to celebrate and that's what makes you happy, I'm all for it. You know, that's who you are. But if you feel like, you know, if limiting your choices is elevating you, that's one thing. But if you're limiting yourself and you feel like it is limiting you, then you don't have to do that. You know, you don't have to make those kind of choices. For a while there, Fausto refused to let me wear the color blue in any kind of photo because he's like, "Blue is my color." I'm like, "Blue is my favorite color, so I do believe I should be able to wear it every now and then."
But because you and I look like each other a lot. already. And so if, when you were wearing blue, people would be like, oh, hi, Fausto. And I'm just like,
that, you know, in your mind.
That's what plenty of times that's happened where people go
I
up
think
to you.
More people
listeners, does Mark and I look like each other?
I think more people think call you Mark than they call me Fausto.
They do, especially at Starbucks.
Oh, well, that's because the app is under my name. And it's also like, an easier name.
Yeah, they're like, so, Fausto. I don't want people to be like, Fausto. Yeah.
And it's like, when we go to restaurants, it's always like, put it under Mark.
Because they're like, Fausto, what is that?
Yeah. And so that's the idea with there. And, you know, it's RuPaul's game. Mm-hmm. And if you want to play RuPaul's game, know the rules.
If you want to play RuPaul's game, don't be lame and do anything that's never the same.
And so, but Gottmik still might get it just because they are so wonderful with that fashion. That fashion is unique and it's very interesting. Simone, a very, very, very strong contender for snatching the crown.
The House of Avalon.
Yes. I mean,
the Lady Bunny says the house is about to get foreclosed.
I mean, wonderful fashion, wonderful wigs, wonderful drag choices. I wonder though, we'll see what happens, you know.
I'm not a fan of Simone's Laverne Cox voice. The same voice that Laverne Cox did when she did Dr. Frankenfurter.
What's that?
In Rocky Horror. Like, it's just this weird, like, phony British voice.
Oh, yeah.
And both of them think it's so funny and clever, and I'm just like, meh. It's like the Pierrot mask. Mm-hmm. I think that's her weakest thing, because otherwise I think Simone is right up there with Gottmik for that crown.
Right. And, people just, Rosé is certainly talented, but again, you know, you're married to that Rosé kind of stuff and your colors are all Rosé. That might not be something. I mean, of course, she's expanded beyond that. But if that's just like your thing, then, it's a wall. RuPaul doesn't like wall. Now, the outside, the dark horse in this, the outside.
Well, before we get to that, so Rosé strikes me as somebody who is genetically engineered to win RuPaul's Drag Race, and that's why they're not going to give it to her.
Oh.
She's like a fembot.
Well, she's a clone of a clone.
A clone of a clone of a clone of a clone.
And so it gets
with
distorted.
A machine inside, and she's like, I must throw shade right now, bitch. You know, it felt like everything, you know, and I said this to like a lot of dancers when I've worked with choreographers and dancers. They get very intense about the movement, but they forget that their face is also part of their body.
Yeah.
And so they have this intense look on their face, or as I call it, like your eyelid is not resting over your iris. It looks like you have the Clockwork Orange eyes.
Yeah. Yeah. She looks very surprised.
Yeah. And so it just doesn't come across as like inviting.
Mm-hmm.
And so for that reason, because she's so kind of cold and calculated in her perfection, it's not going to take her to where she wants to go.
Yeah, RuPaul's criticism. Well, not a criticism, but she noted when she's like, she's a professional.
Perfectionist.
A professional, I think she said.
Yeah.
And so, and part of, I think, drag and the appeal to drag is like, in many ways, it's not professional.
The flaws.
It's the flaws that we kind of celebrate, the flaws we elevate. You know,
the so flawsy dogs.
So much of the drag is born at 3 a.m. in a dark bar. You know, and that's why people who really love drag love it, because that's what you've seen. You've seen those magical transcendent moments where you just like can light up that room and that can happen. You know, this is it could be like a Broadway actor in a costume performing in a role, you know, and rather than saying like I'm a drag queen, before RuPaul's Drag Race, somebody like Rosé would have been like, I'm a character actor. This is a character I do.
Yeah. Like Coco Peru in the 90s. That's what she said. She never said she was a drag queen until much later in her career.
And so the dark horse, and I just have such a big place in my heart for Candy Muse, even though so many people hate her. I fell in love with her from that one meme that went of her sitting in the VIP thing, because it was just like, I felt that so hard. I was just like,
what was the meme?
It was her sitting in a bar, and it's, you know, we should probably read it directly so that people understand it. And it's her sitting in the VIP room. And just kind of like waiting it. And like, I think Alaska tweeted it out. I feel like I saw it even before Alaska, or I saw it and then I tweeted it and maybe Alaska did it afterwards. I'm not really sure.
Sitting alone in the VIP.
Yeah. And it's just her just kind of like sitting there. It's not like there's a certain amount of glamour, but there's also
loneliness.
Loneliness. You know what I mean?
That's happened to us so many times.
Right.
We get invited, we're like a beer company, a microbrewery. Nobody knows us mm-hmm. out of our circles, but the people who do know us really well. Mm-hmm. And so they invite us to come see their shows and stick us in the VIP section, which usually is kind of like they're dangling your body there to be like, Mark and Fausto are here. See, this show's good. And, you know, and I'm like, I'm very flattered mm-hmm. that they would mm-hmm. think that and they're, you know, they're right. Mm-hmm. But it also builds resentment from the unwashed masses, the people who paid to go see the mm-hmm. show. And they're like, who the fuck are these two clowns sitting up there in that VIP box, drinking free champagne, eating free caviar and watching the show? And
blah, are blah, they blah. Getting foot rubs up there? They're getting that's a foot rub. That's a
that's Joe Exotic giving them a, you know, and tiger
so,
mask.
And so, you know, yeah. for me, for with Candy, it's like yeah. The thing I do love about drag is the scrappiness. And she's a scrappy.
Candy Muse.
And so I think she brings a lot of joy, she brings a lot of energy, and she brings a lot of passion to it, which I just don't see it in the other ones. Now, other people are going to be like, Mark, you're mad. You know, there's no way she'll ever win. And I'm not saying that she will win, but you know what? We'll see her on All Stars. After she gets making some of that cointada, then she'll come back and be like, see, bitches.
I don't think she'll win because they want her for All Stars.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah,
she is television gold. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have been watching Drag Race as closely this season if it wasn't for Candy Muse. Mm. I would have lost interest, honestly. It's like, I don't want to see calculated, you know, all drag is valid. I'm like, well, you know, yes.
I saw somebody write, nobody wants to hear the term all drag is valid in reference to their drag.
It's condescending.
Oh, it's totally, you know, it
love me for me or hate me.
It didn't start out condescending, but it became condescending.
As Judge Judy says, don't pee on my foot and tell me it's raining. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's part of it is like, I don't know, just it's, I think fearless feedback, like giving your friends and your peers saying, this is what I like about what you do. And this is why I don't like what you're doing. And this is why. And this is a solution you can come up with is very helpful. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't think Gottmik needs any of my advice, but I think at this point, Gottmik is doing very well successfully. My feedback is for anybody else who is struggling, they're going to be wanting to, you know, think about their drag, their artistry in a way that's holding them back. And if you feel, if your photos look like you're a catatonic Pierrot mask, that's going to be holding you back because it's a wall, like RuPaul says, a rule mm-hmm. that is mm-hmm. keeping you from connecting with another yeah. person.
And you know, Gottmik is probably looking at their Instagram right now and being like, I have 2 billion followers. How is that holding me back?
Let me look at my bank account. Yeah, your drag is valid too, Fausto. So normally we don't announce projects before they come to be. But I just got this wild idea in my head today, mm-hmm. and I started chatting with people out there about it. And I posted a photos of, you know, I post link bait, basically like thirst traps on Instagram to get people to listen to the podcast.
So what you have to do with the celebrities do it.
This day and age, honey, I'm be like a cat showing my asshole,
like,
you know.
Chris Hemsworth, like, let me play with this koala.
So doing that, and thanks for listening to the podcast, by the way. And so I just, you know, people were asking me a lot of fitness and bodybuilding oriented questions. And I said, you know what? What really needs to happen is because we have all this great content over the last 16 years with bodybuilders and, you know, strippers and personal trainers and YouTube bloggers mm-hmm. about their bodies,
yeah.
trans bodybuilders, Jeanne Marie Kroc and Paolo Bautista and, you know, Scott Herman and Thomas Terry and all these really amazing people that we've had on the show. And I was like, we have like a catalog of LGBTQ bodybuilding fitness podcasts. Mm-hmm. Why don't we launch a separate podcast about that topic, you know, geared to like people
you're
who are
just
wanting
it out there. Just,
yeah. And so people like, I got this enormous response. They're like, there's nothing like that out there. You guys are the ones to do this show. No one is going to do it as entertaining or funny mm-hmm. or as full of heart. Because I feel like, you know, a lot of the fitness blogs and all that stuff, they come across as right-wing memes. They're like, you know, America first, and I did this by myself, and blah, 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 you know, just
yeah, bring your guns. I have guns and muscles, and yeah, there's a lot of right wing bodybuilders.
Like, I actually like started collecting some right wing memes of and bodybuilding memes, and so to see if you could tell the difference between the two. Why do I respect fit people? Because fit people with a physique is much more than how good they look. I was like, oh, thanks a lot, asshole. Good things come to those who go out and fucking earn it.
Oh, I was like, Jesus.
Suck my dick. And this other one, man cannot change himself without suffering, for he is both the marble and the sculptor. Barf. Although the model who said this, Owen Powell, I was like, girl, you look good, but that brain is a glass jar with a marble running through it. If you're not getting results, put the fucking work in.
You know,
Dylan McKenna said that. Come on. What do you know? Dylan. Fear is not real. It is the product of the thoughts you choose.
That's the thing that drives me nuts is all their crazy, like uplifting aphorisms that they put in there.
There is only so much growth to be had from leaving toxic relationships. When you leave them, your muscles will grow. I was like, go suck a dick. It's just all this other shit. And it's just, you know, so I was like, we need to jump in the conversation and
gay it up.
So we're not going to say the name of the show just yet. We're thinking about it, but we want to hear from you guys. Is this a good idea? Is this something you guys want to listen to? What should we call it? Let us know.
Let us know. We have some ideas, but we want to hear your ideas, too.
So it was my birthday last week. Yes. I turned 16.
Yeah, you turned 16
on the 16th.
For the fourth time? Third time.
I turned 29 plus 20. Mm-hmm.
And today you got some beautiful flowers from Rafa Diaz.
Rafa Diaz, gracias por las flores.
They're so beautiful. They're white roses.
Cultivo una rosa blanca en junio como en enero. Mm-hmm.
I'm glad they sent it to you. He sent it to you and not Madonna, because that thing has hydrangeas in it.
And I loathe hydrangeas too.
Hydrangeas are filler.
Filler flowers.
Mm-hmm. You did a GoFundMe too, right? You have.
I didn't do a GoFundMe. I did a Facebook birthday thingy.
Okay.
And so people paid or gave us. I was asking for $3,000 for a $3,000 show.
Yes.
We got $200. But hey, that's something.
Hey, that's something.
I really appreciate it.
We have our 3,000th podcast coming up soon, so maybe we'll do a different kind of thing. So, you know, $3,000 for 3,000 shows, that seems all right. It's a buck a show.
It's a dollar show. Come on, people. Yeah. So pony up the money.
We'll get something like that.
American Express will do nicely, thank you. Let me loosen up your collar. Tell me, you want me to talk about Tina Turner's documentary again?
Because we will, and that's not a threat.
I'm obsessed with that thing, but anyway.
We'll watch it again.
So this lovely listener who knows us from way back, this is somebody who listened to not just the podcast, but he actually came to our live shows, that Genesis podcasting in general. Yes.
Yeah. And so he wrote a letter. It says, Dear Fausto.
What's his first name?
Oh, his first name is John Richard.
Thank you, John.
John said, I've recently, and this is, by the way, folks, this is looks as though it was made on a typewriter. So he typewritten this out, right?
And you thought letter writing was a dead art. Mm-hmm.
And he lives in Idaho. I've recently rediscovered your podcast
and enjoy
it very much. I listen while I'm driving a semi up in Idaho. However, in another life, I used to be a frequent attendee of the Feast of Fools Cabaret 20 years ago. I worked at a crappy office job with David Serta, and he introduced me to the show. That was two lifetimes ago before I became a bicycle activist street punk under the moniker of Johnny Payphone. Ring-a-ding! It's interesting to hear you talk about the origins of Feast all the way back in your mom's salon in Austin. There's a direct line from those days to today. I haven't listened to all of your podcasts. What madman could? The productivity is staggering, but I have a very few requests and or questions. The first thing that strikes me is that the show is very positive and not very catty. You won't be surprised by
unless we're talking about Colton Underwood.
Yes, yes, yes.
Or Neil Patrick or Harris. Masks. Or Pierrot Masks. But otherwise, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You won't be surprised by this hot take, but from an outsider's perspective, it often seems like drag culture idolizes some of the worst toxic behavior. I'm guessing on TV there's pressure to create drama still. In my personal life, I found drag queens to be wonderful to be around individually, but a nightmare in groups. Have you ever been to La Cueva in the Little Village? It's a weird to walk into a bar that as a straight guy where my drag queen friends are afraid to go there because they'll get beat up. I don't know. Maybe you have the clout. Anyway, you engage in very little of that type of behavior on your show, and I appreciate it. Have you been to La Cueva? In,
I never even knew it existed.
I don't think it's there anymore. I think I went ages ago.
I've been to a Cueva. Legs.
But you know, some of those drag bars, yeah. You know, you get that intersection of it's drag and, you know, and sex workers, right? And so a lot of these girls, they're in drag, but they're working girls.
Yeah.
And so if you are a girl that is coming into the scene, you might be like, that's a difference between that person eating tonight or having a motel to sleep in and maybe sleeping in a truck or in an alley for some of these people.
We call that toot toot beep beep girls. And part of it is, you know, if you're going up to one of these girls and you're not tipping them for their performance and you're going, when are you going to audition for RuPaul's Drag Race and stuff? Mm-hmm. And they're like, honey, I got to pay my rent. Mm-hmm. And if you're getting in my way, you know, because some of the guys that want to hang out with these girls.
The thing is, though, too, is like
the private dancers.
The girls, you know, they share a lot of the same guys.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right,
so they'll interview them, like, what other girls have you been with? That kind of thing. And so, you know, if you're coming in from the outside, you're taking money out of their pocket. So, yeah, there might be a fight that night.
I mean, you know, like if you've been at a bar and you're really hot for some guy and somebody you know comes in and is like, hey, Fausto, what are you doing? Blah, blah, blah. And you're like, get the fuck away from me. I'm working this corner, okay?
So he continues, the other thing you do is interview older folks. Society in general is very youth obsessed, and I think that the kids today don't understand what a struggle it was to give them the freedom and rights that they enjoy. They're like, being gay is brave at a time when the pendulum has swung so far that we might even see drag get canceled for reinforcing gender roles. That's a conversation for another day. Oh, no, I think we can have that conversation right now.
Well, in my day, which is nowadays, you know, we thought of seniors, of the silver daddies, silver mamas, as hip. You know, if they wanted to hang out with us, we wanted them. Mm-hmm. Larry Bud Melman from David Letterman. You know, it's like Bill Haddad, who was a big part of the shows. You know, a lot of silver seniors are the DNA of our hearts, of our shows. And to me, it's like a lot of that segregation that happens between generations is a whole new thing. That is not something that was part of LGBTQ culture 20 years ago.
Well, you know, when you're looking at like a small town and stuff like that, the gay bar has the older people there, the younger people there, the lesbians, the bis, the trans people, they all go to that one kind of thing. But when you move into like a bigger environment like Chicago, people tend to get segregated more. They flock to their own little corner of the city, that kind of thing. And so sometimes people get left out.
I mean, how old was Chuck Renslow 20 years ago? Like 85 or something,
well,
you know?
I think he died at like his early, I think he was 81 or 82.
81.
So, but you know, I mean, he was a bastion of for like the last 50, 60 years of his life.
And Chuck Renslow was a sex symbol. Mm-hmm. He threw the best parties in town. I mean, the best party in the world. Mm-hmm. The IML Expo to this, you know, with the pandemic ain't happening. Mm-hmm. But, you know, this is the thing. It's like you're missing. If you're excluding your life because of age, you're missing out on the good parties, on the amazing people and the great stories. So it's your loss, you know, and I think the people listen to the podcast of what, regardless of what age or background they're in, they understand that. That's why they're tuning in. And for me, I'm like, you know, we're not doing the, I mean, you know, it is nice to have diversity, but we're doing this because we're greedy. We want to know their stories. We like them.
Well, and you learn from older people. If you don't have an older person in your life, try and seek one out because they can guide you. They have experience and you cannot, you know, there's intelligence, there's emotional intelligence, but there's nothing like experience.
Yeah. And humor.
Yeah.
Honey, old queers are the sickest humor. And they will read a person to
and
filth.
The thing about it, though, too, is like when you get to a certain age, you have the permission to say whatever the heck you want to say.
And it's different if in like, you know, somebody who just got out of college is like, fuck you, you know. But if like somebody who's, you know, 75 years old says, fuck you,
it's everybody listens. Mm-hmm. when grandma says fuck you, everybody's paying attention. Mm-hmm. You know, like Cicely Tyson and Madea's family reunion.
Oh, yeah.
That stops the movie. You know what I'm saying? Everybody's paying attention to her.
Okay. And so back in the olden times, it was often dangerous to be gay. And I like that you call up these older folks and hear their stories. These kids today want a revolution, but are too scared to order pizza on the phone. Oh, well.
That's a read. I like that one.
I guess I'm officially old.
Too scared to order pizza on the phone.
One subject.
They do it on the apps.
Yeah, they do it on the apps.
Yeah.
Listen, I
prefer to order the pizza on the app, to be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah, because like you order on the phone, they're like, you want anchovies with that? It's like, no anchovies. Like, okay, anchovies. And you're like, oh, God.
One subject I'm surprised to find missing in your archives is Tomato de Plenty, the story of two cockettes, Tomata and Melba Toast, single-handedly created the Seattle punk scene, is well-documented and part of a legend. They did a New Year's Day show in 1976 with John Waters for the premiere of Pink Flamingos. But the 5/1/1987 TMT show at the Oddfellows Temple in Seattle is widely understood to be the first do-it-yourself and therefore punk show in Seattle, which built steam for 20 years before becoming a global phenomenon in the 90s. The bands were the Tupperwares, the Mice, and the Telepaths. And this is all verifiable online. Two Cockettes created Seattle grunge. They were just too far ahead of their time to get any credit or money from it.
Yeah, ahead of your time is usually what we describe people who didn't make any money at their creative stuff.
For sure.
Like myself.
Hello. The other subject that you might enjoy is Carmen's Banana Cooking on YouTube. This was a public access show that ran in the 80s and 90s in Austin, Texas, starring Carmen Banana, a mustachioed Carmen Miranda clone who promoted safe sex, banana recipes, and tours of local establishments. They are currently being uploaded on YouTube, I suspect by Carmen herself, and sometimes I am the second viewer. It's worth a watch. The 90s were a great time for public access, as you'd see things that you'd never see on regular network TV. I'd love to hear an interview with Carmen about those crazy times. And another Austin call-in show is Raw Time. A lot of the late-night callers are pretty filthy, and I wonder if this show ever experienced the same thing.
Carmen Banana is my contemporary. She's my Blondie to my Madonna.
Oh, yeah? She came right before you?
She came right before me, and she laid the foundation, so it wasn't weird for a drag queen to be on cable access.
Because for folks that don't know, Fausto did a cable access show in Austin in drag in the 90s.
My God, I've been in front of a camera and a microphone for like 40 years of my life.
Some people wish you'd stop. They could have stopped you then.
They could have stopped me then, but they didn't. No, actually, you know, I'm a big fan of Carmen Banana. I've reached out to her on social media, and she is
crickets.
Well, she and Vaginal Cream Davis or Vaginal Davis are impossible to get a hold of. If anybody is listening out there knows of Vaginal Davis or Carmen Banana, please mail at Feast of Fun. That's our email.
Yes.
Or Fausto Fornos or Mark Felian on Instagram or Facebook or Twitter. Please get a hold of them, and we would love to talk to them. These are amazing, legendary drag queen entertainers who really shaped the world and had so much influence on so many people, including myself. And, you know, they are storytellers. They're still with us. And they're just, you know, like Joe Exotic someplace.
We were going to see Vaginal Davis had an exhibit here at the Art Institute, the Art Institute of Chicago. But it was like it was coming around that time when COVID was just slapping down. So I had to work and then I could have seen them. But then COVID happened. And it was just like, what's it going to happen?
It's really hard to get a hold of them.
Yeah.
And I don't know how these people managed to get them. But I've reached out to them.
They're agents.
Yeah. But they don't have any agents. They're literally like, they're harder to find than the Unabomber. Before he was found.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lastly, I can't express enough how much I have for JoJo Baby. For people that don't know, he's a...
Mr. Baby.
Mr. JoJo Baby.
Mr. Baby. Mr. Baby to the front desk.
Mr. Baby, table for one.
So JoJo Baby, what is the name of the podcast where he finds a skull?
JoJo finds a skull.
JoJo finds a skull. It's a musical number in it. Hey, JoJo baby,
I saw you on the news tonight. Someone's cooking something good for you. And you said, it's not a cupcake.
It's not a cupcake.
Hey, Georgia baby. So anyways, that was an interview with JoJo about the time he was shopping for mannequins. Mm-hmm. And he walked into a man's home to look at the mannequins in the basement. And he went to the kitchen when the man was not in the room, just like Silence of the Lambs. And he's like, oh, there's a pot. What's in the pot? He lifts up the lid.
Tasted the soup.
And a skull, a human skull, rolls up. And he's like, quietly puts the lid back on, acts like nothing happened, and then goes into this man's basement to look at mannequins.
And he was interviewed on the news.
And then he goes home and calls his friend and says, I saw a skull boiling in a man's pot. Is that bad? And his friend's like, you got to call the police. So the police come, and I guess legally the man bought those skulls from eBay. And he's like, it's really hard to get human skulls, you know.
Well, what happens is that they get these skulls from China, right?
Yeah.
And then they take them, but they still might have a little flesh on them. So they boil them to get the flesh off, and then people buy them and they carve on them. Yeah. Not for me. No.
So that podcast is on feastoffun.com/plus. You can listen to it if you're plus.
And
member.
What's legendary about it, though, too, is he was interviewed on the news and he's at his door with the news person there. The camera's talking to him and he's wearing a T-shirt that says Taste of Chicago. Now, for people that don't know Taste of Chicago, it's like a food fair that's downtown. It's just like they haven't done it in a number of years.
It's basic.
Yeah, and the food's mostly gross, but it's just
fried food
and expensive.
Carnival
and
so stuff.
It says Taste of Chicago, that it has an arrow pointing down towards his dick. Now, the 5 o'clock news showed it. The 10 o'clock news had it blurred out.
Damn.
So he says he's an institution. Nobody I can think of has been so productive for so long. I know that you've had him on your show for many episodes, and I love that one about the skulls because I remember when that happened. But that week in particular, he didn't want to talk about it for obvious reasons. To hear your little ditty 10 years later was a treat. And I hope you could feature him in the framework of his life's work and his 20 years as a Wicker Park icon. Although I understand if the weirdness of the dolls and the puppetry doesn't come through the microphone as well. Are you guys doing Twitch or something? I have little time and less bandwidth for pre-downloaded podcasts or the way I absorb culture. At any rate, keep it up and please accept this book as a token of my fandom. I think you will enjoy the sacred relationship that the trickster has to the gender bending and general whimsy in many cultures. We might think of ourselves as clowns, but we represent a connection to the cosmic. If you've already read it, please just pass it on to somebody else who needs it. And
what's the name of the book?
John sent us the book, The History of Clowns for Beginners by Joe Lee.
That looks amazing. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to read it front to back, and I know exactly who to give that book to.
Who are you going
to
give it to?
Kevy.
Mm. Oh.
My clown drag queen, who's kind of like if John Wayne Gacy was like a cartoon character and didn't murder anybody.
Mm.
You know, in fact, she dresses up as John Wayne Gacy.
Yeah.
And
who's this artwork remind me of? I'm like,
I don't know. It's a
guy,
really,
who's the guy that dressed? Is it Crumb?
Crumb, yeah.
Yeah, it's very Crumb like the guy who dressed. Who
that looks like an amazing book. And I'm gonna like, I always looking for a good book to get sink my teeth into. So, Johnny Payphone, thank you so much for sending us a good book because it's
a good
so
letter,
a good letter, and a good book because it's so hard to find good books. But it's so easy to read bad people. We want to remind folks that Feast of Fun is made possible because of fierce, fabulous people like you. We couldn't do the show without you. Please give us a tip at feastoffun.com/donate or give us the whole 9 inches. Mm-hmm. We're also available on Patreon, patreon.com/feastoffun, and access thousands of shows, including the legendary JoJo Finds a Skull. At feastoffun.com/plus. You can become a member, and then you can search for all
thousands,
almost 3,000 podcast episodes at our website, feastoffun.com. It's incredible, honey.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Wait, you're going to Erie, Pennsylvania?
I'm going to Erie, Pennsylvania. My mom is, she fell, so she's not doing too well, but I don't know.
She's feeling better now,
she's
though.
She's feeling better, so we'll, fingers crossed that she'll be with us for a bit longer. She is older, so it's, you know, every day is a blessing that she's with us.
So you're going to go to your mom and be like, Mom, are you feeling well? She's like, yeah, good.
You know, she's surprisingly alert and very active, so
yeah,
we'll see what happens.
She might, is holding on to this, you know, world.
As a good friend of ours said, well, white people are hard to kill.
Well, Mark, thank you so much for doing the podcast. It's always fun to talk to you.
And I'll be back next week unless something unexpected happens.
Yeah, so.
Got some good shows lined up.
God forbid.
God forbid.
Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.